Have you ever looked forward to doing something for years? And when the time came to start the project, you realized that you did not know how long that project was going to take, and you did not know where that project was going to take you. Well, with the start of chapter 6 in the book of Joshua, we come to just such a point in the life of the people of the nation of Israel. For 40 years, they have been on the journey to the promised land, and finally, they are on the land. And all preparations have been made to start the task of taking the people off of the Canaan land and making it their own land. And the people will be at war with these natives who are on the land, these Canaanites. But no one knows how long things will take to work out. And additionally, how long will the project take? Thus, we come to the campaigns of Joshua's command. The first will be the triumphant campaign in the Promised Land, the triumphant campaign in the Promised Land for the city of Jericho. Now, we must look at the state of the conquest by observing the trouble of Jericho and its people of having just outside their camp. Here's the Jordan River, here's Jericho, and right there, right next on their eastern side, is the Gilgal camp of the Israelites. So in chapter 6, verse 1, we read this. Now Jericho was tightly shut because the sons of Israel. No one went out and no one came in. Days before, when the two spies had just a few hours in the house of Rahab in Jericho, she had voiced the same feelings about the people in the city towards Israel. Even Jericho's kings and the peasants, all the way from the kings to the peasants, all felt this way. They were afraid. The camp of Israel is right here on the eastern edge of the city where Jericho's people could view them from the city walls, and the king had ordered the quarantine of the city when he said no one went out and no one came in. It was sealed up tight. So in the camp of Israel, the Lord declared the triumph of Israel over Jericho as we get to verse number 2. The Lord said to Joshua, "See, I have given Jericho into your hand with its king and the valiant warriors." It is the Lord's promise. How could Joshua be anything but encouraged and courageous with that being said to him? And so the Lord continued to give Joshua the strategy for the conquest. It would start with the circling of the city in verse 3. "You shall march around the city, all the men of war circling the city once. You shall do so for 6 days." Well, once a day for 6 days, the men of war would be circling the city. Notice that this was not the people of the camp. This was just the men of war. No women or children of Israel participated in this 6-day assignment. So the Lord wanted the trumpets in the parade also as they went around the city. So he gave orders for the carrying of the horns in verse 4a, the carrying of the horns. "Also, 7 priests shall carry 7 trumpets of ram's horns before the ark." That's in verse 4a. Israel had more than 7 priests. All the Kohaths were priests. Only 7 of the priests were needed to carry these 7 ram horns in front of the ark. Now that means the ark would be in the parade too, carried by the proper Kohaths to carry it, because only the Kohath line could carry, of the line of Levites, the Kohaths could carry it. So the circling of Jericho on the 7th day would be much different. See, the first 6 days is just one time around, but on the 7th day it's going to be different. And all the people of the nation of Israel are going to join in that. So the Lord gives the instruction for that day, the 7th day, and with the cheering of the people in verse 4b. "Then on the 7th day you shall march around the city 7 times, and the priests shall blow the horns. It shall be that when they make a long blast with the ram's horn, and when you hear the sound of the trumpet, all the people shall shout with a great shout." 7 times around the city, 7 trumpets will blast, and the people will shout. With the blast of the horns and the shout of the people we're going to see the cratering of the walls in verse 5b. And the wall of the city will fall down flat, and the people will go up every man straight ahead. And with that, we have the strategy of the conquest of Jericho. Well, with the strategy of the conquest of Jericho in place, we hear Joshua announce the scheme of the conquest with the directive to the priest in verse number 6. So Joshua the son of Nun called the priest and said to them, "Take up the Ark of the Covenant and let 7 priests carry 7 trumpets of ram horns before the Ark of the Lord." Then he said to the people, "Go forward and march around the city, and let the armed men go on before the Ark of the Lord." Well, the directive to the priest had been given by Joshua. And as directed, the next verse tells us about the departure of the priest. From the directive to the priest, we go to the departure of the priest in verse 8. "And it was so that when Joshua had spoken to the people, the 7 priests carrying the 7 trumpets of ram's horn before the Lord went forward and blew the trumpets, and the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord followed them. Once everyone was in place in line in Gilgal, the priest would blow the trumpet, and that would start the march there in Gilgal. Behind the priest, the Ark followed. But the lineup will not occur on the day that this instruction is given. In verse 11, we're going to discover that this lineup will occur on the following morning. So all they're doing is getting ready for this with the instruction. So both the priests were not alone in the caravan that marched around Jericho. Verse 9 tells us of the defenders of the priest. So here we go. "The armed men went before the priest who blew the trumpets, and the rear guard came after the ark, while they continued to blow the trumpets." Well, the armed men were in front of the priest with the trumpets. No doubt, in front of the priest that were carrying the trumpets, I should say. And no doubt these were the men of Reuben, Gad, and half-tribe of Manasseh. They had led the way across the Jordan in battle array. They wouldn't have to take the same position in this caravan, but after the priest came, the ark came next. That's not the way it was supposed to be lined out. Judah was supposed to be ahead. But here for this time, we can pretty be clear that the tribes of Reuben, Gad, and half-tribe Manasseh took the lead here. Now, the rear guard is always and is as important as the front guard. And so this rear guard was probably all the rest of the men of Israel, 20 years of age and upward. But Joshua had one more instruction for the scheme of the conquest. It was the silence of the conquest in verse 10. "But Joshua commanded the people, saying, 'You shall not shout, nor let your voice be heard, nor let a word proceed out of your mouth until the day I tell you, shout. Then you shall shout.'" Well, let us set the scene here. Okay, the lineup will take place in Gilgal on the following day. Once everyone is in line, the priest will blow the horn. That'll start the parade out of the campsite to go around the city. And after blowing the horn to signal the departure from Gilgal, the rest of the parade is in total silence. That is until they hear Joshua give the command to shout. So out they go. The horns are blown. They start moving. Silence all the way around, come back to the camp, spend the night. This conquest of Jericho was the plan of the Lord. Therefore, there was a sacredness of the conquest here in verse 11. So he had the Ark of the Lord taken around the city, circling it once. And then they came to the camp and spent the night in the camp. Wherever the ark was traveling, the ground was sacred. And when the ark circled each day and returned to the camp, the holy desire of the Lord was involved. So after giving all the instructions for the camp against Jericho, the camp rested through the night. Then, early the following morning, Joshua started the sequence of the conquest here in verse number 12. Now Joshua rose early in the morning, and the priest took up the ark of the Lord. The seven priests carrying the seven trumpets of ram's horn before the ark of the Lord went on continually and blew the trumpets, and the armed men went before them, and the rear guard came after the ark of the Lord. And while they continued to blow the trumpets, thus the second day they marched around the city once and returned to the camp. They did so for 6 days. So every day for 6 days, Joshua led the parade around Jericho just as they had been directed by the Lord before. As it is time for each little group to fall over in line and get around, there in the camp of Gilgal, the trumpets would blow and off they would go. And on the seventh day, the order of events would be a little different for those of the past 6 days. The seventh day would be the siege of the conquest, and we hear of that in verse number 15. And then on the seventh day, they arose early at the dawning of the day and marched around the city in the same manner 7 times. Only on that day they marched around the city 7 times. At the seventh time, when the priests blew the trumpets, Joshua said to the people, "Shout, for the Lord has given you the city." We come to a place where the writer inserts some vital information for the Israelites concerning the siege. See, we're still just getting ready for this. It hasn't happened yet. It is not new information, because it was given to the nation just a few months before by Moses before he died, and when the people were camped over on the east side of the Jordan River there in the plain of Moab. The ban was placed on the cities that were going to be taken in the Promised Land, and that ban had not changed except for one detail that Moses did not know about. And here we hear the caution concerning the prohibition of going into this Promised Land and taking the city of Jericho here in verse 17, and all the other cities, by the way. "The city shall be under ban. It and all that is in it belongs to the Lord. Only Rahab the harlot and all who are with her in the house shall live, because she hid the messengers whom we sent. But as for you, only keep yourselves from the things under the ban, so that you do not covet them and take some of the things under the ban and make the camp of Israel accursed and bring trouble on it. But all the silver and gold and articles of bronze and iron are holy to the Lord. They shall go into the treasury of the Lord." The exception for Rahab and her family is an example of Moses' instruction concerning foreigners. If a foreigner converted and believed in the Lord, as was expected by the Israelites and expected by the Lord, they were forgiven by the Lord and accepted. We've not discussed the impact Rahab will have on the future of Israel, but we should do that quickly now. Rahab will marry Solomon of Judah, of the tribe of Judah. Their son will be, get this, Boaz. Boaz will be the father of Obed. Obed will be the father of Jesse. Jesse will be the father of King David. Rahab will have the honor of being in the ancestry as a great-grandmother of Jesus. Now notice also the warning about taking things from Jericho that were banned from Israel. The ban covered the things that the people might covet. Remember that word, thou shalt, that term, thou shalt not covet in the Ten Commandments? The Lord knew this, and He told them not to covet these things that they would see in Jericho or in any other cities and take them. That would bring trouble on Israel. So when Joshua called for the shout, the people shouted. Here is that report of their combat concerning the destruction in verse 20. "So the people shouted, and the priests blew the trumpets. And when the people heard the sound of the trumpets, the people shouted with a great shout, and the wall fell down flat. So the people went up into the city, every man straight ahead, and they took the city. They utterly destroyed everything in the city, both man and woman, young and old, and ox and sheep and donkey, with the edge of the sword. Now, Joshua had not forgotten the promise made to that harlot. He remembered that oath. He turned to those two spies and gave them the command concerning the extraction of that harlot and her family in verse number 22. Joshua said to the two men who had spied out the land, "Go into the harlot's house and bring the woman and all she has out of there, as you have sworn to her." So the young men who were spies went in and brought out harlot and her father and her mother and her brothers and all she had. They also brought out all her relatives and placed them outside the camp of Israel. Wow! Finally, the writer has recorded the summary of the conquest of Jericho. That's what they did. It's done. He tells of the first chattel that was delivered to the promised land of Israel. You say, what is a chattel in verse 24? I'll tell you that in a minute. Verse 24 first. They burned the city with fire and all that was in it. Only the silver and gold and articles of bronze and iron they put into the treasury of the house of the Lord. Okay, a chattel is a tangible piece of property. Something that it's movable or it's immovable, but it's something personal property. It has nothing to do with land or houses. So in this case, it's the property of the dead Canaanites, the silver, the gold, the bronze, the iron chattels from Jericho that are first brought out of that very first conquest and going to go into Israel's treasury, and it will not be the last to enter the treasury. That Israel is going to be wealthy by the time the conquest is over. The writer tells us of the first Canaanites delivered out of the promised land here in verse 25. However, Rahab the harlot and her father's household and all she had, Joshua spared, and she has lived in the midst of Israel to this day, for she had hid the messengers whom Joshua sent to spy out of Jericho. Now, we don't know how many of Rahab's family members were rescued from Rahab's house that day, but it seems from the verse that it was all her father's household. It was her father, it was her mother, it was her brothers, it was her sisters, it was all of their relatives and all of their children. It was a huge group. They were all there behind that window and in that room. So when this book of Joshua was completed, she was still living there in the nation of Israel. And as reward for her help and with those spies, we know, as we've already said, she becomes the great-grandmother of King David. Now, Joshua's words concerning Jericho will be the first curse delivered in the promised land by a leader of Israel. Joshua's words are recorded beginning in verse number 26. Then Joshua made them take an oath at that time, saying, "Cursed before the Lord is the man who rises up, builds this city, Jericho, with the loss of his firstborn, he shall lay its foundation, and with the loss of his youngest son, he shall set up its gates." So the Lord was with Joshua, and his fame was in all of the land. Well, with that curse in place, we have to ask the question, was that curse ever fulfilled? Let me tell you this. Anytime you're looking for something in the Bible and you see a promise, or in fact, if you see a promise, it's a prophecy. When there's a promise given, it's a prophecy that it's going to happen. Remember that. Prophecies are promises. They're going to happen. And sometimes you have to look to the very end of the Bible to see promises. There are promises, as we covered at the tail end of the book of Deuteronomy, that are still to be fulfilled in our future today with the nation of Israel. There are promises all through the Old Testament. I want to remind you of how the Old Testament is laid out. It's laid out with the history first of what had happened before the time of Moses there in that we find in the book of Genesis. And then we find that at the end of the book of Genesis, we come to the forming of the nation that the Lord is going to choose to be His people, the brethren that will bring Him forth as the Savior of the world, of the line of which when He comes as a babe in human flesh, as totally God and totally man. You might have a question about that and say, how can you be totally one and totally other? I want to tell you something. When you're dealing with God, who is able to speak all that is around us into being in 6 days, you think that He's going to have a problem being totally God and totally human at the same time? He is God. That hypostatic union, that's the word for that. Don't fret over that, because that one's easy for God. It's impossible in man's eyes, but it is perfectly easy in God's eyes. There is that history. Jacob goes into Egypt. 430 years later, they come out of Egypt with Moses. They spend 40 years in the wilderness. Promises are made in Genesis. Promises are made in Exodus, Numbers, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. Now they're being fulfilled here in the book of Joshua. But there are seeds of promises that are going to go out all the way. We're still in the history of what's going on with these first five books. Then we go to Judges, it's history. It's the history of Israel. We go to Joshua, Judges, and then Ruth, history of Israel. 1 and 2 Samuel, history of Israel. 1 and 2 Kings, history of Israel. 1 and 2 Chronicles, history of Israel. Then we come to the writings for the poetry and the songs with the works of the book of Psalms and the book of Proverbs and the book of Ecclesiastes. And then we start coming back to some more of those history items that are going to take place. And then comes the big chunk of prophecy books. And the prophecy books all fit back into that history some way, form, or fashion. They all fit back there. And so we have to place them back where they go. And it just makes the Old Testament just pop alive. As you know, as I lead you through all these lessons, it just comes alive. These dead books of Leviticus and Deuteronomy, as I've finished teaching them, have just popped alive for us. When you fill in the gaps, because we know what's happened in the rest of the revelation, the rest of the story that God has revealed to us through the rest of time, up to the day that we are. These prophecy books are important. They're promises. Then comes the history of the coming of the Lord in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. And then we come, as Jesus begins the church, we see the history of the start of the church in Acts. Starting in Romans, all the way through the book of Jude, we have the laws for how the church is to be run and how the church is to be operated. And then we come to that prophecy book at the end. The prophecy books always come at the end. And there's nothing new in the book of Revelation that is not already said to us back in the rest of these books, someplace in the past. Some of the Revelation, as you've studied in the Revelation with me, if you want to study it, you can go to jimhastings.org and pull up the Revelation studies and all the notes that are there. It was a very great study, and I pulled everything back together for us so that we could understand throughout all the scriptures, the Old Testament prophecies, where they all fit, everything where it fit in proper place. And we find out that, hey, the Lord fulfills His promises. If this promise of this curse was made, this promise of this curse would be fulfilled. Was it ever fulfilled? Well, the answer is yes. 550 years after Joshua spoke these words, the curse was fulfilled. We find that fulfillment of the curse over in 1 Kings. I want to read it for you. It's in 1 Kings chapter 16, verse 34. In his day, Hillel, the Bethelite, that means he was from Bethel, the town of Bethel, built Jericho. He laid its foundation with the loss of Abraham, his firstborn. Well, that was the prophecy of the curse. And set up the gates with the loss of his youngest son, Segub. Well, that was the second part of the curse. And lo and behold, here in 1 Kings, he tells us this, according to the word of the Lord, which he spoke by Joshua, the son of Nun. Everything that is promised shall be done. Even in the book of Deuteronomy, where he says, you shall not covet any of the things that are going to be in the city which you are about to go and you are about to take, all those cities and villages in the promised land. Oh, you're going to take the gold, the silver, the iron, and the bronze. You're going to put it in the treasury, but you're not going to take anything else, and you're going to kill every Canaanite that you're going to come about. Well, they've broken the law. They took Rahab. But see, there was even a provision for that in the Deuteronomy group code, because it gave permission that if you would convert to the belief in Jehovah God, you would be forgiven. So Rahab and her family were forgiven according to all that was said in Leviticus and Deuteronomy through Moses. Well, here we come. I hope you look at this and you see that God fulfills promises. He's made some promises for us today. Promises that He will keep for you. Trust His promises.